Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwarzstrauber. On today's show, the election of Donald Trump. What does President-elect Trump think about tech policy? What does this mean for the tech community? There was a lot of chatter before the election about how Silicon Valley had thrown its lot in with Hillary Clinton. And with that not panning out, is the tech community concerned? Are there areas for agreement with Trump despite the thorny relationship before November 8th? Joining me to discuss this is Michael Petricone, Senior VP for Government Affairs at the Consumer Technology Association. Michael, thanks so much for joining the show.
Pleasure to be here.
So let's start at the high level with a general reaction. Many in the tech community were concerned about Donald Trump because of positions he took on immigration, encryption, on trade, and of course the general issues with his demeanor and comments about people of color, which are obviously important issues to people who work in Silicon Valley, a lot of progressive folks there. And there was this issue that pretty much all of the donations from tech were going to Trump, other than Peter Thiel. Not a lot of people in tech were outspoken in favor of him. So do you see this as a problem, the schism between the candidate and Silicon Valley that was so pronounced before the election?
Well, first of all, the mantra of our industry is it's all about change, and the change is good. So we're going to set up a personal example here, I think, with CTA in the tech industry, and move forward and find common ground with a new administration and see what we can do. The president-elect ran explicitly on a jobs platform, and he quite successfully tapped into a deep underlying insecurity on the part of a large number of Americans about their economic future. And if you look at the tech industry and if you look at our companies, they're the companies that are driving the economy. If you look at the top five companies in the S&P 500, most of them, I believe, are tech companies. So he has every incentive to work with us, and we have every incentive to work with him and help him grow the economy and grow jobs.
Yeah, and despite the fact that so many in tech were supporting Hillary Clinton, I know that the head of CTA, back when the Republican primary was still a thing, had endorsed Senator Marco Rubio in the Republican primary. So clearly, there is not this sense necessarily that Republicans and tech can't get along. In some ways, maybe there's a lot of room for agreement. So in general, Republicans like to say that there's small government, that they're against a lot of regulation of technology. Do you see an opportunity here with Republicans leading the White House and Congress and so many state legislatures? Is there an opportunity here for some deregulation, for a change in the way that agencies think about regulating technology?
I think we've got a bunch of opportunities, truly. I think, first of all, you're going to see a pro-business administration. You're going to see a deregulatory administration. He is going to be appointing pro-business regulators. He's going to be appointing pro-business Supreme Court justices. We have a good chance to work together and roll back regulations. They'll make a lot of sense. I'm thinking of things like the Department of Labor overtime rule, which has raised the overtime floor from $24,000 to $48,000, basically obviating an entire longstanding Silicon Valley business model.
Right.
So I think there are a lot of things that we can do together, certainly on the regulatory side.
And then also on taxes. I mean, there is a big discussion of corporate tax reform from both candidates. Of course, Trump has gone after a lot of these companies for hiring foreign engineers, as opposed to companies that hire American workers and do jobs right here in America. So clearly there's some concern there, but is there an opportunity for corporate tax reform with all three branches of government, or sorry, not all three branches, with both houses of Congress and the president controlled by Republicans and likely to have a pro-business Supreme Court? Is there an opportunity here for corporate tax reform that would maybe encourage technology companies to have more jobs in the United States? I mean, is there room for agreement there?
Well, certainly. Right now, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the developed world. And certainly, there's a lot of opportunity to rationalize that and make our nation more competitive. And then the corollary issue is that our tax rate is so high that American companies park billions of dollars, $3 billion at present, overseas to keep from bringing it in at the current high tax rate. So there is certainly room for a deal to bring that money in for a short period of time, or perhaps permanently, at a lower tax rate, and then use that money to fund infrastructure or some other need.
Yeah. And of course, the fact that he criticized companies for having jobs overseas or parking money overseas, that doesn't necessarily mean he doesn't recognize how policy influences that, right? I mean, you react to the incentives that are in front of you. And if you're a company and you're acting rationally and it makes more sense to have money and jobs overseas than it does in the US, you're going to do that. So even though he criticized these companies in some ways and on a personal level, like with Amazon, maybe he does see that this is the result of natural policy and not some choice that companies are making blindly.
Right, which is the exact same point he made in terms of his tax choices.
Right.
Which was, don't blame me. If you don't like it, you're Congress. You change the incentives.
Exactly.
Which also applies to our tax policy. The other benefit is he's not an ideologue. Right. And he doesn't come in with a lot of fixed policy positions.
But certainly on tech, not so much.
Right. He did not, in fact, have a technology platform, which, you know, we had encouraged him to do. And he did not, as you know, Hillary Clinton did. But you know, there's an upside to that, too. And the upside is that he's not locked into anything.
Right.
And he is focused, if you look back on his career historically, he is focused on doing deals and getting things done. And I we also have an advantage. I think if you look at Congress, if you look in the Senate, where Senator Schumer is replacing Harry Reid as a minority leader, Senator Schumer is also, number one, he represents and is very conscious of representing an absolutely dynamic tech economy in New York. And he, again, is not an ideologue, and he is willing to work across the aisle and get deals done and move forward. So, and as a matter of fact, just this weekend, I believe, the president-elect tweeted out his appreciation of Senator Schumer. So that could be a very helpful alliance.
Yeah, that could be a good working relationship there. And even though there hasn't been a change in Republicans controlling the Senate and House, like you said, the number one Democrat in the Senate is now going to be Chuck Schumer instead of Harry Reid. And maybe he can be seen as a more pro-tech senator. You brought up infrastructure, and that was a big rallying cry during the campaign, right? I mean, he's speaking to rural America, key parts of the Rust Belt where people have lost their jobs due to globalization or due to just the changing world, right? And maybe those low-skilled manufacturing jobs are not coming back, but infrastructure could be an opportunity to bring some jobs to those economically depressed areas. When you hear infrastructure, most people are probably thinking the roads are in shambles, we need to fix the bridges, but there's a tech angle there, right? Can you talk about what you'd like to see in an infrastructure package?
Yeah, it's a couple of things. First of all, there's the traditional concrete and steel infrastructure, which is important. And you know, we've all noticed it. Anybody who has taken off from a gleaming brand new airport in Japan or in China and landed at LAX or JFK, it is unmistakable and a very unfortunate experience.
I think in one of the debates, right, LaGuardia Airport was referred to as a third world country, which I think most people in America can appreciate,
right,
that comment.
Awful. It's awful. Yeah. But because it has not been invested in and it's outdated. So that's, you know, certainly roads, bridges, airports, that stuff is important. But as important is 21st century infrastructure in terms of new wireless broadband facilities. Rolling out 5G and other high-speed communications technology, making sure that self-driving cars are part of and integrated into the transportation grid. And we would encourage the president-elect to focus equally strongly on those high-tech infrastructure investments.
Yeah, and that could be a major area of agreement with the companies, because no matter what, if you're an infrastructure company, a software company, everyone needs more Americans online to be economically viable. And in many of these parts of the country where people were frustrated, it might have been a lack of access to broadband that is harming their ability to adapt to a changing economy. Of course, the internet is not a panacea and it doesn't solve all problems. But when we talk about the sharing economy and some of the opportunities for gigs and making money, filling in the gaps in between jobs, I mean, you can't take advantage of those opportunities if you don't have internet access.
You know, these days you can't, if you don't have internet access, you can't even look at the job listings. You can't even apply for a job. I mean, you are essentially excluded from the modern economy.
Right.
So expanding the number of people who have access to that vital service is essential.
Of course. So another issue that has been on the minds of a lot of people, and we don't have to spend too much time on this, but net neutrality. Title II reclassifying broadband as a common carrier that gave the FCC authority. This was widely seen as the cornerstone achievement of President Obama's FCC led by Chairman Tom Wheeler. The conventional wisdom is that a Republican FCC would undo these rules, but that's not necessarily a permanent fix because, as we've seen with the FCC, Republicans can write rules one way, Democrats can write rules another way, it can just go back and forth. Recently, Republicans in Congress said they're still willing to do a compromise legislative deal on net neutrality. When they offered that last year, Democrats were in charge. They said, take a hike. Given the prospect of a Trump presidency, do you think that organizations like CTA and your members, are you excited by the prospects of legislation to solve net neutrality? I mean, is this something that companies could get behind to finally put this long, divisive issue to rest?
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. One of the most important things to any business is certainty. Because without certainty, you don't know how you can hire. You don't know how you can invest. You need to be able to look 5 years down the road with some degree of clarity. And the rules of the internet whipsawing back and forth with every new congressional majority or every new administration is not a helpful thing. So I think there is a lot of potential for agreement on those elements of net neutrality that were not controversial. Transparency, no blocking, those issues.
Right.
As opposed to the reassignment as common carriers, which obviously is controversial. So it can happen a number of ways. I could see it happening through legislation. I could see it happening through the FCC unwinding its authority and putting the issue in the lap of the FTC. But it is not an either-or binary issue. There are a lot of commonalities. There's a lot of room for compromise. So we will, in the end, I foresee, come out with some kind of net neutrality scheme, which is similar to that which was being talked about in 2010.
Absolutely. So let's get to these issues that were really deeply concerning to those in the tech community and might be the main drivers of the disparity in donations and why companies were much more willing to support Hillary Clinton than Donald Trump. And that's, number one, immigration. This was the biggest issue in his campaign. I mean, the infamous speech about how Mexico had been sending not its best people, to say the least, to the United States, criminals, et cetera. And this was really a driving force behind the campaign, build the wall, restrict immigration. These are issues that are important to tech. I mean, the free flow of labor, high-tech visas, a lot in the tech community were saying we don't have enough immigration. You've got the issue twisted. It's not that we have too many, it's that we don't have enough. Given the appointments, right, and the Attorney General looks like it's going to be Jeff Sessions, currently a senator from Alabama, very harsh on immigration. He has criticized CEOs of tech companies for hiring too many foreign engineers, particularly focusing on Asian engineers. Is there a real concern there? I mean, how are your members reacting to this potential crackdown on immigration?
Well, first of all, immigration, high-skill immigration, is what makes the innovation economy go. The only reason we succeed globally and the reason that we're number one in the world is because we bring the best and the brightest and the most ambitious into the United States to start their companies and create jobs. That is fundamental to our innovation success. In terms of the president-elect and what direction he's going to go in, number one, during his campaign, he said a number of things about immigration. I think he certainly expressed concern, but there were also times when he spoke positively about H-1Bs and echoed the need to make sure the United States was the magnet for the best and the brightest. Within his administration, he's got a number of different voices vying for his ear. I think you've got some of the anti-immigration people and advisors that you mentioned, but then he's got Mike Pence, who's more of a mainline Republican and appreciates the importance of immigration. You've got Peter Thiel. So I'm not sure where it's going to settle out. I do believe there is room for a deal on a standalone high-skill immigration bill.
And that's long been an area of debate, right? I mean, there are some who've insisted it be part of a comprehensive immigration reform, these grand bargains which we've seen proposed over the years and not really go anywhere. George Bush tried it. Obama tried it. Many in the tech community have said, why insist that this one piece, which is very different than the problems we talk about with illegal immigration, these are high-tech visas. These are, above board processes. This is not, climbing over a fence at 3 a.m. while the Border Patrol isn't watching. Do you see that as a viable thing maybe for the lame duck as President Obama unwinds his presidency in order to protect that from a future Trump? Or do you see a deal on H-1B visas with Trump in charge?
We'd like to see it as soon as possible, obviously. But I think with Trump in charge is more likely if he can be sold on the virtues of the deal. There's that famous story in the autobiography, the biography of Steve Jobs, where he's talking with President Obama over dinner. And President Obama says, what's the one thing I can do to help you in the tech community? And Steve Jobs says, we need a high-skill immigration bill. And President Obama says, well, I'd love to do it in the context of a larger comprehensive bill.
Exactly.
And Steve Jobs says, well, in that case, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And now with the Republican Congress, with Trump in charge, we do have a window where we can move beyond that and get a standalone high-skill immigration bill. We'll finally break that logjam and fix that problem. And that alone would be just a huge benefit to the economy and the tech community.
Yeah, and it would be a signal to the tech community that it's not going to be some type of retribution where just because we didn't see eye to eye before the election that now we have to constantly be at odds. I mean, if you were to tackle the number one issue that Steve Jobs offered, I mean, maybe there's room for agreement on other issues too.
I believe that's true. And I also believe that the president-elect will have an incentive to do that. If you look back over his career, he's always been very metrics focused, right? Before he ran for office, it was about how many buildings he had. And then during the campaign, he was constantly obsessively focused on the polls, minute by minute focused on the polls.
Right.
So now he's president and you've got to wonder what is the new metric going to be? And maybe it's going to be jobs created, but that's a lagging indicator and that's tough. The most likely one is what is the stock market performance that day? What did the S&P 500 do? If it went up, you're succeeding. If it went down, you're not.
Right.
So number one, you're going to be disincentivized to attack large companies, even if you had differences in the past, because that would have a negative effect on the stock market. And you'll be very much incentivized to do things to help those companies that are driving the economy prosper. And one of those certainly would be common sense, high-skill immigration reform.
Another big issue in the tech community and for every American is encryption, the right to secure your data, whether you're trying to prevent the government from looking at what you've got or you're trying to prevent hackers, identity thieves, Russians, whatever, encryption being the math that allows you to be secure in your data. And there was the big showdown between Apple and the FBI. Trump clearly took the FBI's side on that issue, as did his appointment, Jeff Sessions, for Attorney General. And going beyond that, Senator Sessions has said that encryption needs to be, quote, pierced. He has suggested that the idea that you can go dark from law enforcement is a problem. You shouldn't be allowed to go dark. So is there a lot of concern around encryption, the right of companies to develop products that keep people secure? Things like Facebook Messenger with end-to-end encryption now, things like WhatsApp, other apps. I mean, this has got to be a major area of concern for your members, because I know encryption is on the minds of everyone in tech, and they probably had a lot of concerns about Hillary Clinton on that issue. Maybe their concerns are more amplified with Donald Trump.
Yeah. One important point that we have always tried to make and will continue making with the Trump administration is that it's not an issue of encryption versus security, right? It's actually encryption enhances security and is essential for security, especially in the aftermath of recent events like the DDoS attacks, right? That is an example of why strong encryption is important. In terms of this issue, one thing that's important to point out is that it's not, I mean, the White House view will be important, but you've also got Congress. And number one, we are fortunate that the vast, vast majority of tech advocates in Congress have returned. And they've been working on this issue on encryption and similar tech issues for a long time. They like the issues. And they have very strong viewpoints, and they have a lot of history. And they are going to be heard, and they're going to be an essential part of the equation in discussions with the White House.
As President Obama is wrapping up his presidency, I mean, in this Congress, the Republican chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, Michael McCaul, had proposed a commission to study encryption. Many in the privacy community feel there is no conversation to be had. Encryption is just sacrosanct. We shouldn't be talking about it. But there are others like Apple, especially after their spat with the FBI, who thought it would be helpful for Congress to put together a commission of experts to discuss this issue and try to find solutions to nagging problems. If this commission were still on the table with the new Congress and the new president, would you see this as a beneficial first step in order to kind of cool things off and see where everyone is?
Oh, certainly. We think the commission is a great thing because the first thing you need to do before you take on any complex, multifaceted problem like encryption is you've got to learn about it. You've got to get the data. You've got to figure out what's feasible and what is not. We've gone in and talked to the commission. Other tech companies had. And we've talked about the variety of ways that the tech community can help law enforcement and assist law enforcement, which they want to do. They're all great American companies, while preserving consumer privacy and preserving encryption. Once again, it's not a zero sum. There are lots of ways in which we could help each other and do the right thing and strengthen the United States. But the commission is certainly a very positive step, and we have been working with them and will continue to do so and hope that they continue their work and go forward.
And then on general issues of government surveillance, not just encryption, I mean, we're talking about programs, foreign surveillance. Obviously, Trump's candidacy was not necessarily the friendliest to foreigners. It was very America-centric. If there's still a lot of desire to reform foreign surveillance in order to assuage the concerns of Europeans, the European customers of American companies. They have different views about privacy maybe than American companies. The one thing everyone agrees that would be bad, maybe Putin disagrees, but data localization, right? We don't want to see countries all over the world saying all the data about our citizens have to be stored here. And part of the impetus for that would be America not reforming surveillance. Are you concerned with someone like Sessions in power, Mike Pompeo in charge of the CIA, that government surveillance will increase, that efforts to reform from privacy advocates are going to be dead in the water? What's your reaction to the surveillance bucket of issues?
Well, they're complex issues. However, again, at the basis of all this is an economic incentive. And our products and services are sold on the basis of trust, that the users of our products, to some degree, trust their information will be kept private, will be kept, you know, secure. And to the extent that trust disappears, that harms our industry and harms the overall economy. And I think that's a concept that people in government understand. So there will be a strong economic incentive to come to some kind of to use some kind of approach that will preserve that basis of trust and that level of security, you know, so that we can sell our products abroad and that people abroad can purchase them with confidence.
So is there anything else that, you know, you would say to Trump or the folks working on Trump's campaign in tech? You know, any final thoughts to wrap up the show?
Yeah, the other issue where, you know, hopefully we can work together is trade.
Yes.
And certainly the president-elect expressed kind of a generalized uneasiness with trade. However, there is a history of presidential candidates evolving on the issue. You may remember that President Obama, as a candidate, ran strongly against TPP and trade agreements, and then once entering the Oval Office, became a strong trade advocate.
Yeah, now he's the only guy left who's willing to defend it.
Because when you become president, everybody from people in the Commerce Department to people in the Department of State say, this is important to our economy, this is important to our national security. So yeah, thankfully, it's difficult for presidents to abrogate trade agreements or unilaterally impose tariffs. I think we can stick with the status quo. In terms of TPP, The president-elect has expressed concern about China and the growing influence of China on the world stage, and the best way to counteract that influence is economically with a trade agreement such as TPP, because if we don't, you'll be abandoning the field to China with their regional trade initiative.
That's an interesting point.
Right. So it's not just a matter of economics; it's a matter of national security. And if you're really concerned about providing a counterweight to China, the best way to do that is with an agreement like TPP. So hopefully that view will carry weight.
Yeah, and the China thing's interesting in other areas, because you could argue that if Trump tries to roll back the normalized relations with Cuba, that China will step in and we'll be playing second fiddle to China in terms of connecting Cuba. You could argue that if we go the wrong route on encryption, that only emboldens regimes mm-hmm. like China and Russia that want to suppress free speech and human rights advocates and journalists. So really, I mean, that China argument's interesting, because you might be able to actually get through to Trump on some of the issues where tech and Trump were so at odds by pointing out that a failure to pass trade agreements or a failure to take the lead in Cuba only opens the door for China. And he was railing against China all throughout the campaign. So, well, this has been very interesting. This is our first podcast discussing the election and what it means for tech. So my guest has been Michael Petricone, Senior VP for Government Affairs at the Consumer Technology Association. Michael, thanks so much for joining the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. Feel free to pitch topics and guests. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review, because it will help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.